Wednesday, June 14th, 2017, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports every Wednesday. We do it a little bit different than most sports shows do. Hot takes that don't really make sense, no, we don't really do that. Overreactions, not really exactly our style. Maybe some sarcasm, maybe some actual common sense and insight, we try to go that direction. Now, there are a couple different ways that you can keep up with or contact the Daily Dose. You can go check out new articles. You can go check out a link to the podcast every single week by going to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. In fact, this week, we were actually able to break some news considering the NBA Finals. There was some news about J.R. Smith you might not be familiar with that the Daily Dose was able to break. Might want to head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com and check that out. If you've got a question, maybe you have a comment, maybe you need some advice. You know, our email show is coming up in just a few weeks where we read some of the best emails that we get from listeners. If you've got something you'd like to contribute, number of ways you can contact us. You can just send us an email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is D-A-L-Y, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Or you can just hit us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are @dailydosesports. Send us a message. If you've got a question, you've got a comment, you've got something you'd like to say. I've already started to get a few things that I've been saving for our email show later this summer. We will be reading those. Today on the show, you know, we pride ourselves here at The Dose on being a sports show for the more informed sports fan, right? So many times we see the sports media talking about things that honestly, it just doesn't matter. Well, today we will be talking to someone who actually knows sports, someone who has coached sports, someone who has spent his life around sports. Joining us on the Daily Dose today will be one of the best high school basketball coaches in Colorado sports history. Russ McKinstry will be stopping by the Daily Dose. And not only has he been a top high school basketball coach, he's also worked as an athletic director for a number of years. You want someone that knows sports, knows coaching, knows youth sports. We've got that guy today on the Daily Dose. You know, I want to talk a little bit to Russ about his coaching career. I also want to discuss some youth sports and maybe even get his thoughts on the state of basketball today. Plus, the NBA Finals did wrap up on Monday night. Going to have to discuss those. The Stanley Cup Finals are also complete. We may need to talk about those a little bit. You know, we're getting into that dry time of year. It reaches that point. You got baseball. We don't even have Olympics this year. We don't even have World Cup this year. Not that we discuss them a ton, but it'd give us something to do this summer. No, this summer we've got baseball, and that's about it. However, do not fear, because here at the Daily Dose, we do have a few things in store for you. Just make sure that you keep tuning in, because it might be a dry time of year sports-wise. We will still have you covered. Got to discuss the NBA and the NBA Finals wrapping up. Congratulations to the Golden State Warriors for winning their second title in 3 years. This clip comes to us from ABC.
Curry, three, bang! There it is, redemption for Golden State. One of the great playoff runs of all time is complete.
You know, I actually thought Game 5 completely captured what the NBA Finals were all about this year. And I want to discuss that in just 1 second. But I do want to take a quick look back, because it's been a week since we talked. It's been a week since we were discussing the NBA Finals. I do want to take just a brief look back at the last 3 games. Because Game 3, the Cleveland Cavaliers played their best game to that point. They only turned it over 12 times. Golden State had 18 turnovers. The Cavs actually shot a decent percentage. They even finally got some contributions from J.R. Smith. They had a 5-point lead going into the fourth quarter. But if you watched Game 3 of the Finals, you saw that both LeBron and Kyrie were hanging on their shorts. They were exhausted. In the last 3 minutes, 3 minutes remaining in Game 3, they were up by 6. And then you had Steph Curry hits a layup. Kyrie misses a tough layup. But he hustled to get his own rebound, and then LeBron James missed a layup. Durant hits a jumper. Kyle Korver misses a three. Durant hits a three. I mean, you just saw Cleveland find a way to melt down and get everything that they had worked for taken away. LeBron ended up getting his shot stripped by Andre Iguodala late. Steph hits a couple late free throws. The Golden State Warriors finish Game 3 on an 11-0 run And you just kind of felt like that was probably it. That's probably the end of the series right there. Game four, the Cavaliers, of course, finally decided maybe they would stop trying to out-warrior the Warriors. They'll slow it down a little bit. They're going to play some physical basketball. Now, the one thing we did see when Cleveland tried to play some physical basketball in game four was that we could tell the NBA really, really wanted more games. Because Cleveland was the team trying to play more physical. The NBA was calling the fouls on the Warriors. Cleveland shot 22 free throws in the first quarter of game four alone. Now, I don't want to say that the officiating in game four was sketchy. I don't like looking at that side. I'm hoping that those refs just kind of let the game get a little bit out of control and they struggled to bring that back in. Once you lose that control of your game, it's kind of tough to get it back. And so I don't like looking at game four as fixed. I guess that would be the way to say it. But I mean, didn't it seem just a little bit sketchy? Just a little bit weird? That Vince McMahon, Hulk Hogan, and Stone Cold Steve Austin got that assignment? I mean, that's a little bit weird, isn't it? Those guys aren't even NBA officials, are they? Are they really officials? That looked like a blocking foul, brother! I don't think Hulk Hogan really is an NBA official, but there he was. Game four, he's working at. I don't know. It's a little bit weird to me. In game four, there were 7 technical fouls called. Some of them didn't make any sense. We talked about this a few weeks back. I kind of get tired of just an average foul being called a technical. Let's see, you bumped him and you kind of brushed the side of his face there. Yeah, that's a technical. No, it's not. That's not a technical. That's just a foul. Game four, a little bit conspicuous. A little bit weird. Now, here's the one thing that I will say. There were terrible calls both ways, but it was a little bit weird. Game four, of course, went to Cleveland. Cleveland now discussing, could they get back in it? Can they make the comeback? And then we got to game five on Monday night. And like I said, I actually thought game five just kind of captured what this series was about. The Warriors are not a very physical team. They give up way too many offensive rebounds and they give up some easy points in the paint. But they just have so much firepower that it's almost completely irrelevant. And like we discussed in the weeks leading up to the finals, the Cleveland Cavaliers aren't very good defensively. They allow way too many wide open shots. And that was okay against the crappy Eastern Conference when it was like Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart, because they can't make those shots in an empty gym, let alone in an NBA final series or an NBA playoff series. But when it's Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, of course we saw in game five, it was Andre Iguodala. That's a recipe for disaster. And Cleveland lost track of too many shooters just throughout the series. Their transition defense wasn't very good. First rule of transition defense, get back. Sometimes Cleveland didn't even get back. They'd have two guys back trying to guard three, and then people are going, why couldn't they cover the shooters? Because there's two people back. Somebody's going to be open. I know we heard about going into the finals. Cleveland has kind of flipped the switch. They haven't been playing very good defense, but they kind of flipped the switch. No, they didn't. They played Boston. That was the switch. And we saw throughout the series against Golden State, they struggled to play defense when they really had to. There were a few things that stood out to me in Game 5, though. A couple things that kind of stood out to me. First off, Kyrie Irving works way too hard. Did you ever have maybe a coworker, or maybe it's your dad or an uncle or somebody a little bit wiser than you tell you, hey, work smarter, not harder? You ever had anybody tell you that? Work smarter, not harder. Like, there are smarter ways to go about your business. Apparently, no one has ever said that to Kyrie. Every single possession from Kyrie Irving is like crossover, pullback, spin move, hesitation move, crossover, pullback, Eurostep, fadeaway. And then he wonders why he fades late. Kyrie Irving, work smarter, not harder. You would think Uncle Drew might have mentioned that to him at some point. Because that dude works way, way, way too hard for every single shot. He makes me tired just watching him. Kevin Durant now has got a title and a finals MVP award. Well deserved. Yeah. Well deserved. For those who haven't really watched Kevin Durant play before, he is an absolute freak of a player. I was fortunate enough to see Kevin Durant up close and in person when he was still in college. And you want to talk about a unicorn. And I remember when I first saw him, I was like, what is he? a guy that's like 7 feet tall. He can shoot and handle like a guard. Like, it makes zero sense. Now, I have heard the rumor. I don't know if this rumor is true. And we do have some listeners in Oklahoma. I have heard a rumor that Oklahoma City has actually imploded. I hope that's not true. I really do. I hope that's not true. Some good people down there. Don't take it so hard. I know KD left. Kevin Durant is an amazing player. He wanted to go play with players that actually pass him the ball. Here's something else to think about. Kind of stood out to me. JaVale McGee has a championship ring. Like, I don't even have a joke for that. I just want you to think about that sentence. JaVale McGee has a championship ring. And the time that you just spent thinking about it is probably longer than it will take for JaVale to misplace that ring. The Golden State Warriors are going to be a heavy favorite again next year. And most likely, the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be favored again in the East. Hey, maybe next year they can get it to 6 games. You know, it wasn't a very good NBA postseason. A lot of blowouts, not very competitive series. The Warriors lost 1 game. The entire postseason, they lost just once. Having said that, television ratings were still solid. It wasn't that close. It wasn't that competitive, but people do tune in to watch dynasties. And Golden State won 2 out of 3 of the last championships, honestly, should have won 3 out of 3, except that the NBA decided, we don't really want you to win that one. We'd really like this series to go 7, so you might lose. Other than that, they may win 3 in a row. Now, here's the thing about dynasties, and I know everyone's saying that Golden State is bad for basketball. Maybe they are. I guess we'll see. But people do tune in to watch dynasties, and they either cheer for them or they cheer against them. We're going to let the dust settle just a little bit, and in the next few weeks, we will be discussing some of the changes that could be on the horizon for the Cavs and the Warriors. Speaking of dynasties, at least in this era, at least in the salary cap era, got to talk about the NHL a little bit. Congrats to the Pittsburgh Penguins for winning their 2nd Stanley Cup in a row on Sunday night. You know, Pittsburgh is the first back-to-back champions that we've seen in the NHL since the 1997 and then 1998 Detroit Red Wings. Yeah, pretty impressive. Pretty impressive stuff. Sidney Crosby was named the MVP for the 2nd year in a row. Pretty good couple of years for that guy. Now, I want to talk again a little bit to Nashville. All of those country music fans in Nashville, you can now go back to not pretending like you like hockey. Like, it was fun while it lasted. I get it. I understand. It was kind of a little bit strange to me, though, that the people back in Nashville, they adapted like really, really quickly to hockey. Like, something about white guys carrying sticks and wearing masks. I don't know. They picked that right up. Kind of weird. Not sure what that's about, but nicely done, Nashville. Better luck next time. One story we've got to talk about before we get to Russ McKinstry. Some news broke last week. Bob Stoops has retired at Oklahoma. And I know, like I said, I know that's old news, but it is kind of weird timing. And I want to look just briefly at it going forward. Bob Stoops, we know, he did have some smoke around him. He had some off-field issues with several players, a few players getting in trouble. You always kind of wonder about that when you have a coach, because that's a lot of pressure on a coach. And Bob Stoops, he does have some health issues. He wasn't one of those guys that wanted to coach until he was 80. He's had some heart issues. His father actually died on the field while coaching at a younger age than Stoops is now. Here is my concern on Bob Stoops being out at Oklahoma. We talked a few weeks ago about the Big 12. Big 12 has been struggling just a little bit lately. Here's the question that I have, Daily Dose listener. Name the coach keeping the Big 12 conference afloat right now. Bob Stoops. He was the guy, right? Okay, name the next coach giving this conference any credibility whatsoever. Yeah, do you see the problem? Texas is in rebuild mode with a new head coach. Baylor is in self-preservation mode trying to convince anyone who will listen that campus rape was not actually a part of the football program's morning calisthenics every single day. Which apparently it seems like it was. And then Oklahoma State is in denial mode, losing to Central Michigan and then telling us they didn't lose to Central Michigan.
That ain't true!
Do you see the problem in the Big 12? Bob Stoops was kind of carrying that torch. Now we got to see if anyone else can step up and carry that torch for the Big 12. Hey, coming up, we have got Colorado high school basketball coach Russ McKinstry. He is going to talk about his amazing coaching career. You definitely do not want to miss that.
Yeah.
Every time I go to get new body armor or some more drones, I always go to Amazon. But I don't just go to any Amazon. I go to rogueintel.com/Amazon. So this way I can help out my favorite podcast with every purchase I make. And I know I purchase a lot. Get to the chopper now!
Table Reads with Sean McBee and Trevor Thompson.
Do you like podcasts?
Hate them. Hate them to death. Don't want to listen to another one ever again.
Good. Do you like movies?
Hate movies. If I could, I would just listen to music for the rest of my life.
Do you like hating things?
Hate liking things, and I like hating things. I especially like answering questions from people I hate, like you.
Well, do I have the thing for you?
I don't know, but I hope you don't.
I have a hateful podcast starring me and you, where we hate on movies that never got to be made.
Hate, 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 hate. We wrote scripts, and we didn't make it, so we're hating on these ones that didn't make it.
Experience the worst Hollywood has to offer with readings of the scripts you never wanted.
Well, that's because they're hateable.
Hate, 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 hate.
They're terrible.
Table Reads. Every Tuesday, right here on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, or visit TableReadsPodcast.com.
Hate.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case,
and I'm a princess,
and I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com.
As promised, joining us right now on the Daily Dose Hotline, we have a very special guest. You want a guy that knows basketball? You want a guy that knows sports in general? Hey, Russ McKinstry has been a high school coach in Colorado, Arizona, and Kansas. He has won over 400 high school basketball games. He's made 9 Final Four visits. He's won 2 Colorado State Championships. He was named Kansas High School Coach of the Year in 1987, named Colorado Coach of the Year in 2012. He has sent numerous players on to play collegiately and professionally. You might recognize some of his former players' names. Josh and Jordan Scott, Matt Carroll, Supo Jagody, Justin Smith, Sean Chacon, remember Sean that played for the Colorado Rockies? Pat Garrity had a long career in the NBA. He has also spent some significant time working in athletic administration as an athletic director for multiple high schools and is currently a district athletic director in Northern Colorado. So he has a really unique perspective, not just on basketball, but on youth sports in general. Plus, he's just a smart guy that gets sports in general. Coach Mack, welcome to the Daily Dose. Thank you for joining us.
Mr. Daly, it's a pleasure. I hope you're doing well. And, boy, that, you made me sound pretty impressive. But I don't think, you know, all the talent that I coached and all the great players and assistant coaches that I had the pleasure to work with deserve just as much credit. But thanks for that nice introduction.
Coach, I may have painted a flattering picture of you with that intro, but you do have a major stain on your record. You hired me to be one of your assistant coaches back in, like, the late 90s. So there goes any credibility you might have had.
I am proud that you were honest enough to admit that.
See?
You know, it does make me reflect back on my life choices. but I've overcome that decision.
Yes, you have.
Life is good, and I hope yours is as well.
You can't always hit the bullseye, as I think what that teaches us. Sometimes you're going to miss.
Yeah, so true, so true.
Here is the question of the day that I have for you. How much are you benching these days?
Oh, you know, I'm getting up there, Dales. I think I could probably get maybe 275 up.
Okay.
But the days of 300 and above, I think, are long gone.
I don't believe that. I bet you could. But 275,
I don't think so.
275 is still pretty impressive.
Well, thank you. For an old man, you know, I'm on the downward side. I'm 55 now and still trying to beat that age and, you know, all the bad things to go along with getting to be an old man, but I'm finding out it's a losing cause, but I'm still going to fight like hell and
Sure.
I try and keep on the good side of the graph.
So I understand.
We'll keep trying.
Well, that was all we wanted to know. Thanks for coming on. We just wanted to see what you're benching. Hey, you know, I did want to talk a little about your coaching career and then maybe talk some youth sports, just kind of coaching in general. And I'd like to get some thoughts from you on college hoops and maybe even a little NBA if we can. You good with that?
Okay. You bet.
You know, you were raised in Julesburg, Colorado. And for people that don't know, Julesburg, Colorado is up in the northeast corner of the state. If you stand on a beer can, you can like see into Nebraska. You played multiple sports up there. What kind of player were you up there?
You know, yeah, you're right. I'm proud to be a country boy, proud to be from the metropolis of Julesburg, Colorado. you're right. We are actually, I could walk a half mile from my house and be in the state of Nebraska, which I'm not proud of. But I have a big disdain for Cornhuskers. So
sure.
Sorry to all your Cornhusker fans out there, but we weren't the best of friends. But yeah, it was a great place to grow up, Coach, in the fact that we had nothing else to do but play sports. So everything revolved around the high school athletic program and sports. So I was actually a four-sport athlete, quarterback in football, point guard in basketball, and that was my love, my passion. Ran some track, which was not my passion, but because life was so boring in a small, you know, town in northeastern Colorado, you just did everything just to, you know, stay away from boredom. So I ran track and then also played baseball, was a pitcher, shortstop in baseball. But yeah, my love and my passion was always basketball. And, you know, I was fortunate to play with a lot of good players that also kind of thought the way that I did, that, you know, if there wasn't time to chase girls and drive fast cars, then you better make time to shoot hoops. So we spent a lot of time in the gym. Sometimes we weren't supposed to be in the gym, but we found ways to sneak into the gym and spent most of our days either shooting basketball or playing one-on-one or, you know, figuring out, you know, ways to try and chase down girls. So that was kind of my upbringing. And, you know, I think I was a good high school basketball player, had some opportunities to play at the collegiate level, but instead chose to follow a girl to college. And it was probably the best decision I made because she ended up being my wife. And my wife, Shelly, has been a great, great wife for me and really been a big part of my career. So I ended up going to Northern Colorado and actually walked on and played some JV basketball at Northern Colorado when they still had JV basketball programs at the collegiate level. But that was the end of my career, and rightfully so, because I was, you know, I could jump about 12 inches on my vertical and, you know, wasn't that quick. And there are a lot of better athletes than me. So that was kind of it. And that's kind of where I started my coaching career too, because once I found out I wasn't going to be a player in the NBA and play for the Knicks, the next best thing for me was to find a way to stay involved in basketball, and that led to coaching.
Were the Knicks your team? Who were you watching as a kid? What were the players that
you know,
were
Willis
watching?
Willis Reed was my hero.
Okay.
Closely followed by Walt Frazier and Earl Monroe. But yeah, the first time I really got into basketball, it was when the New York Knicks were playing and, you know, having a good run with Willis Reed and DeBuscher and Bill Bradley and Jerry Lucas and Stallworth and Barnett and Frazier and, you know, Monroe. And I just absolutely fell in love with the game because I was watching them. And when Willis Reed did his big, you know, come from the locker room with the leg that was injured and, you know, he found a way to help the Knicks win that game. I was hooked. I mean, I just became totally hooked with the game of basketball. And I was about 10 years old when that happened. And that's when my love was cemented, I guess, with the game of basketball. I just really found that to be really motivational and something that I really got addicted to was the game of basketball because of that Nick team.
Willis Reed was a tough dude. Didn't he at one point like challenge a whole bench? Like, if anybody wants to fight, I'll take anyone on who wants to come out here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, his growing up in the era that he played in, you know, he was an undersized 6'10", 6'10½" center, and growing up against Bill Russell and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and, you know, Bob Lanier with the Pistons and Artis Gilmore with the Spurs. And, you know, I just really liked the fact that he was so fundamentally sound, so mentally tough, and able to play through adversity and, you know, was tough mentally and physically, that I kind of adopted that type of mindset myself as a player and hoped to kind of emulate that type of player.
Did you know at a young age you wanted to coach? Was that something you kind of looked at or had a coach that was a mentor that you thought that was somewhere I want to go?
You know, once I really was mature enough to realize I wasn't going to be an NBA player, and right. that probably happened maybe, you know, when I was 14 or 15, you start looking at going to be a 6'1", slow white point guard.
Sure.
There's not a lot of those around, you know, even at the collegiate level. That's when my connection with my high school coach, his name was Dale Parker. I respected him so much, and he taught me so much about the game. And he had the boldness and the audacity to actually name me a starter as a freshman in high school as a starting point guard. And there were some juniors and seniors that were pretty good ball players. And, you know, of course, they didn't make them or their parents very happy, but he stuck to his guns and supported me. And we kind of developed a special connection after that because I know how much crap he took.
Right.
For, you know, inserting a skinny little freshman into the starting five. And like I said, everything in a small town revolves around athletics and, you know, the coffee shops and the restaurants. And there's a lot of talk that goes on. And, you know, I know he took a lot of heat for that decision, but I really developed a strong respect for him. And once that happened, then, you know, I wanted to kind of become his protege. I wanted to emulate everything that he was about. And unfortunately, he left. Going into my senior year, he got an opportunity to be the top assistant at the University of Wyoming for Jim Brandenburg, who was the coach at that time at Wyoming. And so I lost him, but it also turned out to be a great break because what happened was he would invite me up to work the University of Wyoming basketball camps and spend a lot of time with that team as they were playing back then in the WAC. So I used to be able to sit on the bench during some of the WAC games, like when they played BYU and BYU had Danny Ainge.
Sure.
You know, I was sitting at the end of the bench during, you know, those crazy games in the old field house in Laramie. So again, it was bad for a year because my senior year was kind of miserable without him. But the payoff was that I got to spend the next 4 years really training under him and learning from him and Brandenburg. And Brandenburg also, his coaching tree had people like Mike Montgomery, who ended up being at Stanford and coaching in the NBA. Judd Heathcote was part of that coaching tree, and he was coaching at Michigan State. So I got to actually go to Michigan State and work at camp when Magic Johnson was still a player at Michigan State. So, I just got a lot of great opportunities because of my connection with my high school coach and kind of how he made sure that he took time and made the effort to mentor me through my college years, too. So it all worked out great. I've had a great career and just everything's kind of revolved around basketball and my family. And I've been very, very fortunate.
What was your first coaching job then?
Actually, my first coaching job was I was 14 years old, the freshman in high school, and I was hired by the town of Julesburg to coach the Legion baseball team. This is kind of a weird deal. So I actually was the head coach for a group of players who were 17 and 18 years old. They're older than me. And I wasn't eligible to play because the rules said you had to be 16 to play Legion A baseball. So it was strange. At first I was petrified, but it actually worked out pretty well. I had an assistant coach who was he's probably about 50 years old at that time.
Okay.
And he kind of helped me through the process of, you know, trying to gain respect of kids that were older than me and that I went to school with. And there were some rough spots, but it also taught me an awful lot about how to build relationships and how to kind of cater to people that initially don't respect you. But, you know, if you handle yourself in a certain way, you can kind of get over those pettiness and jealousy type factors that sometimes come into coaching. And that was my start, actually, in baseball, not basketball.
Wow, that's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah.
So then what was your first high school job?
You know, I graduated. I was 22 years old when I graduated from college, and I thought I was, you know, pretty hot stuff back then. So instead of taking an assistant job, I thought, hey, I'm ready to be a head coach, and I want to be a head coach. So I looked all over for someone that would take a 22-year-old first-time head coach and let them run a high school basketball program. And finally, a gentleman by the name of Gordon Tope, who was a former CU, Colorado University point guard, who had moved to Kansas and was a superintendent of a small school district in Kansas, took a flyer on me and hired me to teach history and to be the head basketball coach at a small high school called Copeland, Kansas. So I became a head coach at the age of 22 and which again was kind of strange because a lot of my players were 18 years old, so they weren't much younger than me. But that was my first job, and they had a 42 game losing streak when I was hired. And I think that's probably why they took a flyer on me, because nobody else would take the job.
Why not? Yeah.
They finally found someone ignorant enough and stupid enough to take a program that had lost 42 straight games. And I was fortunate. I had a really good eighth grade class that came in the year after I was hired. We broke, after losing 10 more games in a row, we finally had a group of guys that understood what it took to win. And 3 years later, we were actually playing in a state championship game in the state of Kansas.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was a special group. We also were very fortunate. We had a exchange student from the German junior national team that joined that program. And that was my first experience of getting somebody with international experience. And his name was Stefan Pokinski. And he went on and played for the German national team later on. He was a two guard that had unbelievable range. So, It was again, just a lot of factors that came together that allowed us to be really, really successful. So it wasn't so much my coaching as it was that we just had some really hardworking, talented players.
I'm assuming that then you left Copeland to come back to Colorado, or how did that work?
Right. I missed Colorado a lot when I was in Kansas, and the people there were great. It was a great place to start my career. They treated me great. They let me make my, you know, rookie mistakes and kind of figure things out, both teaching and coaching. But I miss Colorado. My wife, she's from Colorado. Shelly's from Colorado as well. And we wanted to be closer to home. So got the opportunity next to go to, Lyman, Colorado. And, you know, they have a great tradition of winning in all sports in Lyman. You know, when you look at small towns and successful athletic programs, Lyman is right there at the top. So went there and spent 2 years there and really liked it. But I think it was June 6th of maybe 1990, 1991, somewhere in there, the tornado hit the town of Lyman.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And we were there. Yeah. When we were there and, you know, it really destroyed our cars and basically destroyed half our house. And we were kind of bummed about that. And we were kind of thinking about, well, what do we do with our next step? And I got the great opportunity. It really was a great opportunity to moved to Lewis Palmer High School up in the Colorado Springs area and become their head coach. And again, it was a move that we just couldn't pass up. So we moved to Lewis Palmer, and I was fortunate there to, again, just really be blessed with some great talent. And we had a really good, in fact, I think I was at Lewis Palmer for a total of 8 years, and seven out of the 8 years, we were able to make it to the Final Four.
Wow.
It's just a really, yeah, really good athletic community, and they really loved their basketball. And I also had the good fortune of coaching, you know, like you said, Pat Garrity, who went on to be the Big East Player of the Year and get drafted by the Phoenix Suns and eventually traded to Orlando for Penny Hardaway in the Penny Hardaway deal.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then he ended up playing 10 years in Orlando. And right now, Pat is the assistant general manager for the Detroit Pistons. And the talk is that not too in the far distance future, he's going to be a general manager for an NBA team. So, you know,
good for
that
him.
Was, you know, yeah, he's done really well. And he's just a really, really good person, and went on after his career in the NBA to get his MBA from Duke University. And, you know, he's just extremely intelligent, bright, with a great family and a really bright future as well.
And what a stud of a player.
Yeah, oh, unbelievable. He, you know, I've had great players, but there's no doubt that Pat is the best player I've ever coached. And, you know, he shot over 70% from the field his senior and junior year both. And he's probably not recognized by a lot of the people in the state of Colorado.
Right.
Because he didn't play in the Denver area. But, you know, besides Chauncey Billups and maybe Tom Chambers and maybe even Joe Barry Carroll, Pat, I think, would be, you know, in the top five of the best players ever to play in the state of Colorado. But some people never might disagree with that. But I've seen enough, I think, in the 30 years or so that I've coached and been around basketball to confidently say that Pat should be right there in the, you know, top five of all the players ever to play in Colorado. He was just an amazing, amazing player.
Well, and I think he proved it with the career that he had. It wasn't like he flamed out in college or he just went away. He went on and had a great NBA career.
He really did, and played for some really good Magic teams. And would, his career would have been longer, but he tore an ACL and started developing some knee problems. And we all know how that usually turns out for players. Is, you know, the ACL is kind of a tough thing to overcome, especially when you're, you know, a big guy.
Right,
the bigger
right.
you are, the tougher that is to overcome. But he hung in there and got full pension, and I think he was the treasurer for the Players Association and really built a good reputation with the league for someone who was both a good player but also a smart business person with a lot of integrity. So, again, I think only bigger and better things are going to come for him in the future.
When you left Lewis Palmer, you kind of went back to a little bit of the smaller schools, didn't you?
You know, what happened, kind of a really strange story. I really liked Lewis Palmer. We were kind of settled in there. But we had our second son, and his name's Logan. My oldest son's name is Vance. And my youngest son, Logan, was born 3 months premature. He weighed a little bit less than 2 pounds when he was born.
Wow.
And because of that, yeah, he was in intensive care for almost 2 months in the hospital. And as we all know, the cost of health care is astronomical.
Sure.
So by the time we got through that experience, we had built up a tremendous amount of medical debt, and we were just living paycheck to paycheck and barely surviving as we were trying to pay off a lot of medical bills. Well, Shelly's dad, my father-in-law, lived in Greeley, Colorado, and said, hey, you know, if you ever come to Greeley and teach and coach here, I've got an extra, he owns some real estate, I've got an extra house. You can live in this house and we won't charge you, you know, any rent.
I see.
You just live here.
Sure.
And so, you know, looking back on it, if I had to do it again, I'm not sure I would do it. But at the time, it made perfect sense to me that,
right.
hey, the only way we're going to get out of this debt situation is we better take advantage of this. So I moved on to Greeley Central High School and really enjoyed my time there, too. I wasn't there very long. I was there only for 2 years. But that's the reason I left Lewis Palmer. It was kind of a way to continue coaching and teaching, but also financially maybe get out of some, you know, hard financial times by not having to pay a mortgage.
There's some big rivalries in Greeley.
Oh, yeah. It was a great conference. Greeley West was a big rival and some of the most intense, you know, high school basketball situations I've ever been involved in were in that Greeley Central, Greeley West, Northern Conference with the Fort Collins schools and the Greeley schools and the Loveland schools. It's a really very nice area to coach because, again, it's they're bigger schools, but they still have that small town pride and interest level in their high school. So winning and losing means an awful lot to those schools when they're playing their rivals. So, again, it taught me a lot about coaching under pressure. And, you know, even your administrators, your principals, your assistant principals, you know, it was not uncommon for them to say, hey, your job is safe as long as you beat our rival Greeley West. And that's pretty much the message I got was, hey, as long as you beat these guys, you don't ever have to worry about job security. Well, that was a kind of a backhanded or underhanded way to say, hey, you better win these games.
Win or else, yeah.
Really, yeah. This is what your job's all about. You got to beat these guys. Yeah, so it was interesting, but Greeley Central had some tremendous basketball tradition because they had a coach there for a long time by the name of Jim Baggett, who is kind of famous in the basketball world because he really was the first coach in the 50s to really talk about and utilize pressing defenses and fast break basketball. He actually was consulted by a lot of collegiate and NBA programs to learn how to run a fast break and how to do pressing. And so he was a big deal, and he used to attend every one of my practices.
Wow.
So not only did I have administrators, you know, kind of putting the pressure on me to make sure we won games, but
right.
we had this basketball legend who would show up every day to practice and try and convince me of the way basketball should be done instead of the way that I wanted to do it. So it was interesting, but again, I was a young guy. I was still in my 20s and still learning my craft. And, you know, it developed a lot of strong convictions in my philosophy and how to do things and how to hold your ground, but also how to listen to people and learn the game from some people that knew an awful lot about the game as well.
How much did you listen to him? Did you put in any of what he was saying to put in?
Or you know,
did you just pacify him?
Honestly, I mostly pacified him.
Yeah.
His philosophy was that anything over two passes at the offensive end was a waste of time.
Oh, wow.
And just a mistake waiting to happen. So he really believed, Flint, that, you know, if you made anything more than two passes, then you were not coaching offensive basketball the proper way.
Wow.
And that is something I just couldn't buy into.
Sure.
I think the game had changed enough from the 1950s to the 1980s, early 1990s, that sounds good. You know, the Westhead kind of philosophy, it sounds good, but when you go to execute it, unless you really have a special bunch of players, it's going to, you know, backfire on you and you're going to look like an idiot. So, but his defensive philosophy about trapping, pressing, always putting pressure on the opponent from a defensive perspective, that I bought into.
Sure.
And I learned a lot from him because, as you know, since we coached together, we really did take that and try and utilize that in everything that we did in our programs. Is we really believe in full court pressure and pressure in the basketball and always being on the attack, never being passive, never being the non-aggressor, making sure you're always the aggressor. So I did learn some things from him when it came to that.
When you left Greeley Central, I'm assuming that's when you went to Smoky Hill High School.
Yeah, it is. And at that time, Smoky Hill was considered to be one of the most pathetic, abysmal basketball programs in the state. And it probably was.
Right.
It was a large school is a large school in the Cherry Creek school district. But, you know, they had about 3,000 students at that time. And my thinking was, hey, if you can't find 5-6 good basketball players out of 3,000 students going to the school, which meant you had about 1,500 boys, if you can't find 5 or 6 hoopsters, then there's something really wrong, you know. And I just didn't think the odds would show that to be the truth. So I took it after many of my closest friends in the basketball community said, please don't do it. It's a graveyard for coaches.
Right.
And, it's going to ruin your career. And I'm so glad I didn't listen to their advice because it turned out to be just the most wonderful move. And, you know, it took us, the first year we got beat, we went to Cherry Creek High School and Cherry Creek had some players that eventually played at the collegiate level, at the high collegiate level, and a player that actually played for the Chicago Bulls in the NBA, and they were very good. And we went to their place, and they threw out this by 31, and I think it was like 64 to 32 or 33. Is pretty bad, pretty rough night. But after the game, I said told the guys, you know what? Here's what I truly believe is going to happen. We see these guys at home again in about a month, and we are going to beat them. I promise you. And that was kind of audacious, I guess, arrogant on my part, but I really had a sense that we would. And they came back a month later, and we beat them, I think, by 12 at our place. And I think they're ranked second in the state at that time. And we went on a 13-game winning streak after that. So, you know, they had the players. They just didn't have the right culture at Smoky Hill.
That was Michael Ruffin at Creek? Was that who that was?
Exactly, yeah, Michael Ruffin, yeah. Yeah, that's good. Good memory. And, you know, he was 6'10" player that had a lot of good pieces around him, too. I mean, they had shooting guards. I mean, they probably went 6'10", 6'8", 6'7", across the front line. It was a nice squad. But we got hot and started to believe in ourselves, and the players were playing with a lot of confidence. And we ended up making a pretty good run to the Sweet 16 that year in 5A. And then after that, we just consistently had good teams. We never won it all, but we were always, you know, usually typically in the top 10 in the 5A level. And there was some really good basketball at that time in Centennial Conference with Mullen High School and Cherry Creek and Overland and Eagle Crest and on and on, Fairview, Boulder. It was just a really, really competitive conference. And I was there for 9 years and you were part of that run as well. And you know how much fun we had. And every night you had to, you know, coach your brains out to just try and be competitive. And it was just a really, really special time in my coaching career, those 9 years at Smoky Hill.
So you talked a little bit about being at the small town school. And when you go to those small town schools, if people that are listening that don't know, like you said, the coffee shop, the gas station, the general store, they're all at the gymnasium waiting for you. That is everything. You change and you go to a place like Smoky Hill where it's in the metro area. It's a big school. It's in a big town. Which of the two was better? Did you see positives and negatives to both of those?
Yeah, good question. Great question. The hard part about being in a small town and why I was glad to leave that environment was just a fishbowl that you live in, you know, the glass house where everybody knows everything about everything that you do, and you just can't escape, you know, that that scrutiny. So whether you go to a restaurant, the grocery store, go for a walk, you're always going to be running into people that question, you know, your motives as a coach or your strategy.
Sure.
And so, you know, which is great because they care so much. And I didn't look at it so much at the time as a negative. I just thought of it as, hey, these people are just really invested in their school and their community, and they want what's best for their kids. So from that perspective, it's great, but it also, it just wears you down mentally, you know, just because you just can't escape. You can't do anything without running into something that correlates with your job. And so when you go to the big city, you kind of have the opposite problem where you just have apathy, especially if you go into a situation where their program's viewed as a losing program and you're kind of the joke of the school. And then you're trying so hard to make your kids and your program credible and have some validation from the people that are in your community and your school. Then it's a different kind of mental stress because you're trying so hard to prove yourself. And, you know, people are making fun of your players in the hallways, so they don't have any confidence. And
right.
So trying to get that mentality, that culture turned around from so much negativity and so much sarcasm, I found that to be extremely difficult, but I also found it to be extremely rewarding. And that's kind of where I fell in love, not only with coaching, but I fell in love with the pursuit of leadership and how great leaders lead and how they establish winning cultures and how they change, you know, cultures from losing cultures to winning cultures. So even though it might have been a negative to begin with, it turned out to be a blessing because it really led me to find a passion of mine besides just basketball. My passion became leadership and how to motivate and build relationships and really become, you know, a better coach because of those circumstances.
Coach, you left Smoky Hill. You ended up going down to Arizona for a while. You coached at Chaparral High School down in Scottsdale. They've got some big-time athletes. They've got lots of money down there. They've got top-notch facilities down there. How was coaching down in Arizona?
You know, that was an eye-opener. I guess, you know, the best way I could explain it would be, you know, I was coaching at a high level in Colorado, and my family had some connections to the Phoenix area. We thought we wanted to retire there and kind of live out the final days of my teaching coaching career in the Phoenix area. So we got this opportunity to go to Scottsdale Chaparral, which is kind of like the Cherry Creek of the Phoenix Scottsdale area. It's a big time job, and they take their athletics very, very seriously, and they have some tremendously talented athletes there. What I noticed was there was a big influx of California athletes that moved from Southern California into the Phoenix area.
Okay.
And those kids were then going to these Phoenix schools. So there's a very competitive environment with a lot of top-notch athletes. What I didn't realize was the amount of money that parents are willing to spend to make sure that their kids are successful and, you know, whatever they need to do from a financial perspective, they're willing to do to make sure the programs are ran at a certain level. And I equated it to maybe what the SEC in football goes through when you have boosters who money is not a barrier to making sure that their program is ran a certain way. And that's kind of the way those schools in Scottsdale were. And anytime you have money involved, especially at the high school level, I mean, it's one thing at the collegiate level, and we know a lot about the dirty stories and, you know, unethical things that go on at the collegiate level. And we've all heard the rumors, and a lot of those rumors turn to be true. But that also was kind of at the high school level too, where I had a lot of people who, you know, had tremendous amount of financial resources that would come to me and say, hey, you know, if my kid makes varsity, here's some things I can help you accomplish with you in your personal life. Yeah. Which I had never faced that, you know, never had really gotten to that level in Colorado. So that was the first time I was faced with the realities of big time money. And Scottsdale has an awful lot of money. I thought Cherry Creek was an area that had a lot of, you know, money and people that were lawyers, doctors, white collar professionals that had a lot of money. But it did not compare to what I ran up against in Phoenix. And so it was okay. I dealt with it. but it also...
That kid was starting, and you were driving a Bentley.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes you look at them and say, why can't you just do that? You know,
right, right. Why do I have to have a conscience?
All this, yeah, forget this integrity character nonsense. And you can be rich and the heck with what people think about you. But I just can't go to that level. But I did enjoy my time there. But unfortunately, some health problems sprung up, and the health problems were significant enough that it kind of changed the direction of my life and actually led me back to Colorado. And that's a good thing, though. Being back in Colorado, I really found out that was really where my heart was at. And even if it was some pretty severe medical issues that led to that happening, it ended up being a good thing.
And for those who don't know, and there are articles out there about it, but Coach went through, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe was it considered mouth and throat cancer?
Yeah, I think they officially called it head and neck cancer.
Head and neck.
And yeah, and the tail end of that first year at Chaparral in Scottsdale, I knew I was sick. I was kind of in denial, but I knew something was going on, and the symptoms were getting stronger. And finally, at the very end of that season in February, I finally broke down and went and saw a specialist and found out that I did have head and neck cancer. And so, and we found out too, they said, you know, the nice thing about head and neck cancer is it's very curable. The bad thing about head and neck cancer is it's probably the most torturous cancer remedy situation that we can put you through. I mean, we're going to take you to the brink of death. And anytime you radiate the head and you take chemotherapy to kill a cancer in your head, the after effects, the side effects are really, really significant. So they said it would probably be best that if you got close to family, because you're looking at probably a year or two where you're not going to be able to do anything but, you know, fight this cancer. So, and they were, I was very thankful they were so honest, because if I would have tried to stay in Phoenix, coach, teach, plus get support from my family, it just wouldn't have worked out. So thank God they were honest with me, and we ended up back in Colorado, and I had some great doctors at the University of Colorado that got me through it. And, I can't thank them enough, because I'm still around and enjoying life, and, it all worked out for the best.
You know, the one thing I think that people go through, and one thing I wanted to ask you about, because when you're a coach, so many times you're trying to teach kids how to go through adversity. And we say all these things and we have these quotes, and then you're face to face with something like this and you're going, man, I gotta go back to the lessons I've been teaching now.
Yeah. No, it is. It's, you know, you can talk the talk, but now you gotta walk the walk. And that's what it was. And thank God, you know, one thing that I can't thank my high school coach enough about was he was big on teaching us how to handle adversity. And his voice kept going through my mind almost daily when I was fighting cancer, you know, about making sure you don't run from your problems, confront your problems, be mentally tough, have faith in the process. But also, you need to work as a team. And that's probably the biggest thing I remember is, you know, he always taught us about, hey, there's going to come a day in your life where you're going to have to depend on others, just like you do in a basketball, football game. You just can't do it all by yourself. And you got to let the pride and ego go and, you know, just turn a big part of your life over to teammates. And that's what I had to do. I had to turn my life over to my doctors and my caregivers, like my sister and my wife, obviously, and my mom. And I had to let them handle a lot of what I was doing with my life at that time. And if I wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have been successful. So again, when you talk about the importance of a good head coach, that is a great example of how much of a role a coach can play in a person's life, because it really did keep me going during that 2-year process of, you know, trying to fight that horrible disease. It just really kept me motivated and strong and got me through it.
Well, and Coach, there seems to be this community that kind of forms once you go through something like that. I know from my perspective, my mom went through breast cancer. She had to fight through that too. Because you had gone through what you had gone through, you were telling me, here's what to expect, here's what to tell your mom, here's what she's going to face, all these things. She still to this day looks at you and says, Coach Mack got me through some of those tough times that I didn't know what to expect, because he told me a little bit of what to expect. But being, you know, in that situation kind of creates that community where you help each other get through things that you've been through.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a fabulous community of survivors, and I'm so glad your mom's doing well. And I had people that did the same for me. And, you know, some of us are blessed and we're lucky enough to make it through it, but we also know a big percentage of the fighters, you know, aren't so fortunate. And at the same time I was going through it, I was able to work with the head coach from Arvada West, whose name was Eddie Reeves, and he actually had almost the exact same type of cancer I had, and cancer was located in basically the same place. And, you know, Eddie was a great coach, great fighter,
yeah.
And unfortunately he wasn't so fortunate and lost his battle. So, yeah, cancer survivors, they're a special group of people, and they do hang together. They relate well. And the hard part about cancer is that doctors, their only job is to destroy the disease, but they're not there to pick you up after the disease is eradicated and you have all these things that have happened to your body and your mind, and they're fighting anxiety and depression. They don't really care about that part of it. So if you don't have other cancer survivors to lean on, it can be almost overwhelming. So, you know, it's something of a large fraternity, unfortunately, because there's so many people that have had to deal with it. But it also helps in that recovery process. And the part of what most people don't think about, well, you know, you survived cancer, good for you. But cancer, you know, it doesn't just go away. It stays with you mentally and physically. And there's a lot of issues that you've got to deal with after the supposed battle is, you know, over.
No, you're right. And it does. And it takes that time. And sometimes the worry, I know with my mom, you go back in and you get that yearly checkup. And once a year, once every 6 months, whatever
yeah.
it is, you go in with just the, oh, no, here we go again, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. That's really tough. And you know, that the mental part is much tougher than the physical part. Yep.
Hey, just a quick reminder, make sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Do any shopping that you may need to do. Loot Crate delivers the best in merchandising and collectibles, featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. You can go order a crate, a subscription to crates, or just individual items. The newest crate is called Alter Ego, and it contains all sorts of items featuring Spider-Man, Marvel Comics, Transformers, and DC. Explore the secret nature of some of pop culture's favorite heroes. You know, they've got shirts, they've got hoodies, comic books, figurines, hats, and even stuff for your pets. And you can always go back and order past crates or past items. The best part about ordering, when you place your order at checkout, put Daily Dose in the coupon box. We will get you 10% off of your order. Hey, I genuinely hope that you enjoyed the interview with high school basketball coach Russ McKinstry. You know, he has such an important and interesting story. I didn't want to just speed through it, so I am actually going to continue this next week. But, you know, I want to get his thoughts on the NBA. Are the Golden State Warriors one of the best teams of all time? And is LeBron James up there with Michael Jordan? Coach Mack actually answers that question and a lot more. Plus, we will be looking at the NBA draft a little bit and keep you up on any of the latest sports news. Hey, if you'd like to recommend the podcast, and we would appreciate that so much, please let your friends, family, and coworkers know. They can subscribe to the podcast pretty much wherever fine podcasts are hosted. Head over to iTunes. They've got it. Go over to blogtalkradio.com. They've got every single episode. And if you'd like to share the podcast, but you don't actually want to talk to anyone, we completely understand. Just click that little share button wherever you listen, and you can send your friend or whoever it might be a link to the show. And sometimes that's easier than actually having to talk to someone. Plus, if they're technically challenged, you know, you take the guesswork out of that. Maybe they don't understand the podcast thing. You help them with that. Also, make sure that you stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com. The Daily Dose is a proud member of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, and they've got a number of other podcasts over there that you're going to like. Go check out a few of the new shows that are up over at rogueintel.com. Again, feel free to contact us with anything that might be on your mind. You can email us at dailydosesports@gmail.com or find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Have to say thank you to Russ McKinstry for the time. Looking forward to more talk with Russ next week on the show. Have to say thank you all so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the interview. I think you're going to like next week even more. But thank you so much for tuning in every single week to the Daily Dose. We do appreciate it. Thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.